Hello, everyone. Welcome to another awesome discussion. As usual, every Wednesday when we meet and we sit down, as we talk about bulls and bears. Technically, for those of you who are joining us for the first time, the bulls and bears is a session that we sit down as the HISA team. We invite a few guests to the show, and we generally have a discussion around what's really moving markets. What is it that guys are really interested in? So bulls and bears, just as we do other sessions, it's more of an open forum where guys can also be able to just chip in, share a few ideas here and there. This is usually a forum where we let you actually speak and give us your opinion. There are a lot of discussions that usually go around the open forum here on Telegram. And so what we do is we let you now engage with us. What is really happening? What's moving a few markets here and there? We know this week a few guys have really been into Forex, and also a few guys have really been into Dogecoin. I know later on we'll be able to let Jackson just let us know if he opened a few positions on Dogecoin. Eric Asuma is also in as usual, helping us with a few data as guys talk here and there. Also, don't forget that this podcast and this session is always brought to you by HISA team. So in case you're wondering what HISA really is HISA is a platform. It's Africa's first crowdsourced trading platform that you as an investor, you can be able to get news and data from. So just as we continue with this show, you can actually just download the HISA app, check out the data. I know you've probably, if you're following HISA on Twitter, or if you're within any of the forums for Kenyan Wall Street Trading Room, you're probably wondering where these guys usually get a lot of data from. So HISA is definitely the place that you'd want to really move into. As we start today's session, I'd let Eric Asuma probably say something. I know he wants to mention something about Warren Buffett, but I won't let him yet. Eric, you can just make an introduction.
Hi, everyone. My name is Eric Asuma, part of the HISA and Kenyan Wall Street team. As usual, I'm happy to be here to discuss what's happening across markets from both a local and global standpoint. A lot happened this week. I think much more than we expected. I think markets are always a surprise, so looking forward to a nice chat and discussing the same. Thanks.
Interesting. I know Eric Jackson, you want to chip in and say your name. Oh, for guys wondering, we always say during the podcast that we have three Erics. So we have Eric with a C and Eric with a K, and then there's also one more Eric who's not in the show today, but definitely he'll be joining us for We Are Curious on Friday. Eric Jackson, to you.
Hey, everyone. Hi, Felix. Hey, nice to finally again congregate today. Yeah, so I don't know what you're having today, Felix. Is it whiskey? Is it water? For me today, I'm just on coffee.
It's very cold to add something cold in Nairobi, so definitely I'm with you on coffee.
Cool. Yeah, so for me again, just looking forward to another discussion. I know there's quite a lot to unpack. A lot of bears on, especially on the crypto markets over the past 2 weeks, and as well on the stock market. Even though we had some good results from the big tech giants, I think most stocks sort of just retreated after that. So quite a lot to unpack. So looking forward to it. And I've also seen you've put there some. A topic on Kenya and her new best friend Tanzania. I think you just went short of saying her new best friend Suluhu, but you know, looking forward to that as well.
Well, something very interesting. I think Kenya tumepata Suluhu, so to speak of it. But then maybe for those of you who are wondering, Eric, we just want to start a discussion straight off with the global markets before we come back home. Yesterday, we saw a little bit of a decline. We saw a tech sell-off. The moment when Janet Yellen, the CS, that is, sorry, Jesus Christ, why am I into CS? Anyway, Janet Yellen had said yesterday, and for those of you who guys who are wondering, Janet Yellen is the Treasury Secretary for the United States. So she had said that rates need to move up for a very long time. For the past, I think, 1 year, the Feds have kept their rates to all-time lows. We're seeing rates as at levels of about 0 point something. So Yellen said that rates might need to go up so that the economy can sort of like recover. And we saw a lot of investors, mostly in tech stocks and all these other companies, really try to exit. And I'm just checking, even right now as we speak, the S&P is still trading a little bit flat, the S&P 500. It's gone up, it's gained about 15.62 points, which is about 0.38. Checking on as well, the NASDAQ is also at around 0.28. So something still slightly low. But also, one thing that I'd want us to mention, as we look onto these few stocks, the few companies here and there, we might also want to look on the companies, sort of like firms that are really weighing down the larger components of trading within these global markets. I know this is something that Eric Asuma has been looking, and he'd really want to mention. Eric, do you think that with Yellen mentioning that the rates would need to be moved up, you think that would sort of sway the Feds to take the rates up in the next meeting? And what impact can this really have for investors who are investing in offshore markets, or even investors in the US, and now to them that's their local market, but for us, you know, offshore. So if you could just share your thoughts on that.
Interesting. I think Yellen's comments were, I think, rattled the market in a way. I think what I was very keen on, now what I think for me, what I was very keen on, I think her comments when she said that, look, the government stimulus package will lead to higher interest rates, and I think this could prevent the economy from overheating in a way. I think U.S. markets are very unpredictable, and I think after this comment, U.S. stocks were on the red, the likes, the tech companies, I think, saw some heavy losses, the likes of Apple, and even including, I think, some of the medical stocks like Moderna, I think, dropped massively. So I think her comments had a huge impact on the market during yesterday's session. But I think for me, what stood out, mostly were her comments on what's happening on the crypto industry. I think she said that, look, crypto, that industry has to be regulated. So something that we are keenly watching, I think, for the next few weeks. I think a lot of regulators around the world are now calling for regulation of this industry. The question is, how will they be able to regulate such an industry? But across the global markets, a lot is happening, and I'm keenly following on what's happened to some of these stocks, tech stocks. In addition to Yellen's comments, I think a lot is happening that's affecting the markets, from shortage of semiconductors to the stimulus package. I think Joe Biden's comments on the economy and all these deals that he has put in place, it's very interesting. I think it's an interesting quarter for the markets. The other question is, are these offshore markets going to continue to raise the way they have? Are we going to see some sort of a standstill at some point? It's really hard to tell. But it's a lot of interesting things are happening across the global markets. Thanks.
All right. Something very interesting, Eric. I know you've mentioned something that might have touched on to Jackson about Bitcoin and the entire crypto space being regulated. I know that Eric Jackson has a few reservations, and I know this is something we all agree on. The main reason why the invention of the entire blockchain technology and the cryptocurrency space has been a network that is unregulated gives it a little bit of higher value, because it's believed that sort of, and I'd say what I know, someone had mentioned earlier on in the forum, that the cryptocurrency space is good because it technically gives everyone an equal opportunity. My only concern, which maybe also Jackson would just come in, and my concern is, why are we, if crypto gives guys an equal opportunity, why are we still pegging it to the dollar? So maybe Jackson, you can chip in on that. Do you think regulating the crypto space would be something you might be supportive of, or and probably what impacts and what implications would it have to crypto traders, guys who already who've heavily invested currently in cryptocurrencies?
Yeah, I think again we've had the crypto discussions over and over again, and I think Kaptich, you're in the chat, so just feel free. I've allowed you to speak to also jump in. But again, if you look at that question of regulation, how do you then effectively even regulate that? For me, I'm looking at say just Dogecoin itself. Leave alone even Bitcoin and all the other, leave alone even Bitcoin. I'm looking at, say, Dogecoin, which has risen to a market cap of what, over, you know, just, I think it hit about 400 billion, if I'm not wrong. So you're looking at more and more adoption of crypto, and more and more people are actually starting to look at how do we then incorporate all the various, say, cryptocurrencies into our systems. We've had a lot of major players like Visa warm up, major banks in the US as well warm up. So I think at this point, we shouldn't really be talking about regulation in a bad way, because realistically, there's no way we can say crypto is banned and it's not going to be used. So it's going to be a way in which governments find it safe for them to partake crypto applications, rather than really doing something like banning it or regulation, which usually means taking away the innovation from that application. So for me, I think we are past that stage of worrying about really a government clamping down strongly on crypto, because even what we saw with Turkey, I think 2 weeks ago, although it sent quite some chills down some traders, you know, in different markets, but again, Bitcoin has been resilient enough to recover from that news of Turkey sort of putting some restrictions on traders trading the crypto. So for me, I feel like we are past that point. It's really about governments trying to find a way to incorporate crypto into their system. So finding a leeway to actually then use cryptos for given applications, say, be it for a store of value or anything else. But again, Kaptich, I know you, it is something that you are passionate about. So maybe you can also share your comments.
Right. Thank you, Eric. I think I agree with your sentiments in terms of Bitcoin and crypto by extension being beyond government ban, because the way it is designed and also the amount of, we are talking about a $2 trillion dollar market cap right now, something that was less than 200 billion a few months ago. So I think on Dogecoin, I think it's basically, it has no fundamentals for number one. There are no fundamentals of it. It was actually like a meme coin, which is like a joke cryptocurrency, but with a lot of hype and FUD, I think it has gotten a lot of interest. Of course, the number one guy who is actually pushing for it is Elon Musk, which I think, I don't know whether he's joking about it or he's serious, because I don't want to think the day he'll say something negative about Dogecoin, what will happen to the market, because in the end, I think it's basically people's emotion that is being worked around. And right now, I think the past 2 weeks I've gotten calls from people I talked to long time ago. And the funny thing is that they're not asking about Bitcoin. They're asking about Dogecoin. So that tells you how the euphoria is up there. But we're going to see some, of course, correction very soon. But by and large, crypto is a growing industry. It is actually turning heads right now. And in a couple of, you, Erica, I like the fact that you mentioned about Turkey. when Turkey came out with a big ban, I think most people were really like shaken. But I was like, yeah, this is good because it puts more things into perspective. And right now, actually, they have a well-structured way of now addressing Bitcoin in Turkey, which is actually a very a big positive in crypto, which I think I mentioned last time. But all in all, it's good to work with fundamentals in anything that you're doing. That's why for Bitcoin, for crypto, it has to have some basics. That's what I like to insist on. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe I can share a bit on that. Sorry for coming in a bit late.
Yeah, but... hi, Dave. How are you?
Good, thanks. Yeah.
Welcome, boys.
Thanks. It's interesting, Yellen's comments. Actually, people should really go back and look into history a bit. In the 1970s, the same thing happened. Of course, the Fed then wasn't doing quantitative easing. The thing was that interest rates were extremely low. And so what ensued was a really high amount of inflation. And what happened next, and of course, the Fed has said that they won't increase rates until 2023, 2024, thereabouts, or at least that's what they want. In reality, if inflation shoots up, they'll be forced to increase rates because the economy will overheat. Okay. And that's, of course, will force the prices of stocks to go down. for those who don't get why this happens, or why the stock market is so reliant on the Fed either raising and reducing rates, that's monetary policy, it's because when you effectively increase rates, you increase the weighted average cost of capital. So you increase the rate at which businesses can take loans and such things, which increases, you know, the cost of doing business, etc., which reduces profits. And that makes forward prospects to look really bad. So when the Fed reduced rates to zero, it increased valuations in the present. But of course, if inflation shoots up, the vice versa will have to happen. Fed will have to increase rates and valuations will shoot all the way down. And actually, that's what Bitcoin solves. You know, interestingly, you know, over long periods of time, through innovation, through, what's this called? As business flourishes, in a matter of speaking, the prices of goods and services are actually supposed to go down. So in the long run, we're actually supposed to experience deflation in an economy, deflation of prices of goods and services and the like. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen. And the reason it doesn't happen is because we don't have a constant monetary base. You see, because governments are always printing money, etc., and hence inflation and the like. Now, Bitcoin actually resolves that to a large extent because, okay, the monetary base is constant in that it's fixed at the 21 million, as in that's the total amount that will ever come out. And so it's disinflationary, especially relative to the dollar. So there's a lot of innovation in that space that I think people are really taking into account. And I've also seen that people, you know, flying to that as a hedge of sorts, and also to gold, which is good under an inflationary environment. Mm-hmm. So this really interesting things to see play out. Of course, it's one of the things that I kind of hoped would happen, that the stock market in the US would really correct, because at the end of the day, valuations are extremely high. You know, fundamentals don't reign at present. But assuming that the interest rate environment was quote-unquote normalized, valuations would come down as people now start focusing on fundamentals rather than, yeah, other things. Done. Felix.
Thanks a lot, Davis. I think that's quite something that a lot of guys might have been wondering, what's really happening and why comments by Yellen would really send stocks tanking. Because looking at stocks, if you're looking on the week-on-week performance, that's looking on the past 5 days. And I'm looking on a few stocks. An example is I'm just trying to look on Apple. And Apple, which has been the major laggard, I guess, on the big tech stocks, has been down from about 136 USD, that is a week ago, that's on Thursday last week, and now it's about 129. Well, it might not seem marginal, for a lot of guys. But if you're looking at it as well from an investment perspective, that is something that's quite huge. But also on the positive side, Apple is trading right now at, it's gone up about 1.23%. So that technically means if Apple goes up, then also looking at it on the other hand, Microsoft is trading within the same range. Also looking at Amazon is also, okay, Amazon is slightly on the lower edge, about it's down about 0.7%. But if the major blue chip companies listed in the US markets will be positive, then we're hoping that maybe the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ would close on the higher edge. Now, maybe I just move into the next bit, which I know most guys are really waiting for. It's usually said that a dog has its day, but look like we've had one that has been here for a whole year. I know Kaptich had mentioned a little bit, something slightly about this, but maybe I'll just bring him back as well to the topic. We're seeing Dogecoin or Dogcoin has gained, Dogecoin has gained about 14,000%. Oh my God, that's year to date. I don't know what I'm doing with my life. I didn't buy Dogecoin. I think this is one of those things that I can personally regret. Kaptich, I don't know if you bought into Dogecoin. What would be your takes? You've said that we should expect a correction. Probably what level should that correction be? Because I'm seeing like, looks like diamond hands have all come back to Dogecoin. Everybody's holding. So with less supply, the demand seems to have really gone up. And I think also guys have a fear of missing out. That's FOMO. So with guys literally being afraid of buying into guys, if that fear of missing out, and with the support of Elon and everything else, what should we really expect? Should investors look at this from sort of like a lower temporary thing? But then also at the same time, maybe if you just also just give guys on a few thoughts, you know, we can't talk about crypto and we don't talk about Bitcoin. What would be your thoughts on BTC? So I'll just bring up Teach back, and then we can have a few discussions on cryptos before now we move back to the stock market.
Thanks for the for the invite. So on Dogecoin, I think I maybe want to compare with what maybe stocks saw something similar. That's on was it GameStop, where we saw huge spikes up, then something down, then again another spike up, then another one down. And where is it right now? I think you know better where it is right now. So I think the same would apply to Dogecoin, because there's a lot of interest, meaning a lot of money coming into the particular pair of Dogecoin and USDT or Bitcoin. So that, of course, will push the price high, but it won't sustain for a long period, which of course it will have a huge dip. So just to maybe to answer what you're saying, I think about maybe 7-2 hours or something, or even 1 week, would see some light. But the best thing to compare with is GameStop. Maybe you can touch on it once I finish. On Bitcoin, I think it's almost getting, because it didn't pass a key support as a key resistant area that it was actually aiming to pass. That is about 61,000. So again, we may see another backdrop to start another trending downwards, but it's crypto, anything is possible. But all in all, investors shouldn't if you're willing, I mean, first of all, of course, the rule of investing is that you should actually at least invest what you are willing to lose. If you are looking to onboard Dogecoin now, I doubt whether it would be a good idea, but I mean, everybody has his own investing strategies, but from where I sit, I think it's, if you didn't board the ship back in January or even early April, or, sorry, early May, I think you may be like now handing over your money for guys to to exit. But that's my view for now. Thanks.
Yeah, and then once again to everybody who's listening, as usual, the rule is whatever you hear on this show is purely just a discussion that a few random guys are having. This is not
yes. That's true.
Security. Yeah, so I believe that is one thing that guys have taken in. Captich has given a very good explanation and a disclaimer. Please don't buy based on this advice. Do your own research before you buy anything else on the market. I'll just probably bring back Eric Asuman now as we touch on the local market. I know Davis is on standby as well. One thing that I'd really want us to really now have a little bit of an extensive look would be Safaricom as a company and as a stock. So Safaricom has dropped in today's trading session. It's gone down about 0.6%. Eric, what would be your take? Do you think that we have guys who are exiting the market? Do you think guys are profit taking? What would really be your take on Safaricom, considering that, yes, our most favorite company, not really our most favorite, but what do we call it? Our most diversified company, because if you buy Safaricom, you've diversified into the market. What would be your take? Do you think guys are profit taking, or should we start expecting another load of approach from foreign investors who I think last week were majority of those who held activity on Safaricom?
Interesting. I think someone asked, shared a very interesting thoughts on. I think Eric, you remember you shared a screenshot of someone who said, should we expect Safaricom to hit 50 soon? People gave their different views in terms of what's expected, but my thinking was, with this new, when Safaricom announced last week that, look, they have placed a bid for the Ethiopian telecom license, I think that, again, excited, made investors to be excited about that particular account. I think at the time, I think the stock last week, I think it hit about a new high of around 41. And I think given that on Friday, the Ethiopian, the agency that is involved with issuing the licenses said that announced only two companies had placed their bids, and basically it was Safaricom and the consortium of Safaricom and the others, and MTN. So basically it's expected that from what investors expect, Safaricom will be one of those that will be awarded the license. In addition to that, they expect to release their earnings, I think, that will be next week. So my thinking is most of this is already priced. Investors have already priced in. I think most of them priced in. So some are either profit. Most specifically the foreign investors, my thinking is it's a moment they are trying to cash out, given that the counter is already up. I think, if I'm not wrong, I think when the year was beginning, it was around 25 shillings, early from around 26, something like that, but it's gone up over the year. So it's a stock that I think it's good. It's that stock that if you're trading local equities, it's a stock that you can't miss to have as part of your portfolio. But look,
And also
Safari. Okay.
No, it's sure, Eric. You can just finish that before I give a few comments.
So my thinking is Safaricom plays a big part of the NSE and a big part of our economy. So as I said, this is not investment advice, just our own thoughts. So my thinking is Safaricom will hit 50. I don't know when, but I'm
I think Felix and Felix, I know we've wanted to have this discussion just a bit more. And given that Davis is here with us as well, and I know Eric, the other Eric has joined us, we've just lost him again. But I think it could be good to also just look at Safaricom holistically again, Davis, as we've done before. And in as much as Eric is showing a lot of optimism, we've always said that Ethiopia is high risk, high reward. So, and you outlined some of these risks in our previous chats, as well, to just look more holistically on it as a company, and then for it as a stock, again, given the risks that that could happen with, maybe the separation of M-Pesa from the main business, or even the high capex that are involved in setting up in Ethiopia as well.
Maybe just before Davis really comes in, I know we've really had a discussion about Safaricom into Ethiopia, but maybe we can also have a brief overview and maybe a discussion with Davis on what should investors really expect from Safaricom's full year results, because that should be next week on Thursday. For those of you who are wondering, Jackson, I know this will be updated on the Hisa app. We should get the events calendar coming up soon, right?
Yeah, I've actually just shared the screenshot in the group. But that should be rolled out to all the users soon, to just track any upcoming dividend payments, book closures, AGMs, results, announcements, and all of that.
Yeah, so I'm thinking there, Safcom is releasing the results on the 13th. But David, you can just proceed. We can just also have a discussion. I'll share with you guys a few thoughts on what a few brokers have said regarding Safaricom's result, what they expect. But I believe that's one thing. I'll let Davis go first, then I'll give you guys a comment.
Yeah, among things of note is some of the speculation that was made as to why Safaricom and I think MTN were the only ones who actually applied for the license in the end. Some of the speculation that was being made is that Ethiopia will actually make the companies that win the license to build their own infrastructure to reach out to the people, etc. Now, as Safcom does that, this means that and they've actually mentioned this, they'll take up a huge amount of debt. Of course, with interest rates being low as they are, the interest expense may not be as high as they would have otherwise been, but they'll still take up a lot of debt. And then the capex will be extremely high. The capital expenditures on that project, you can imagine putting up telco towers and the like. And then among the other concerns that, of course, this will weigh down the bottom line of Safaricom. And then other concerns that we had was that, That first of all, it's not mobile money that's being allowed. Of course, Ethiopia said that mobile money will be allowed over time, which is a good thing. So the chief concerns that we had was that Safaricom is almost, it's entering that market almost as if it's Airtel. Airtel now to our local market. So you can imagine the amount of cost they have to incur just to gain those clients, just to take those clients from Ethiopia Telecom, which is already well established and the like. This may weigh down on Safaricom's financials and ultimately lead to, lower prospects going forward, high risk, high reward type of scenario. So investors have to weigh that and bear that in mind. But this thing will either end in Safaricom really penetrating into the market well and being part of the growth, because the penetration with regard to telcos and the like is really low in that country. Mobile penetration and the like is really low, and they have such a high population density, 100 million and or something along those lines. If they're able to pivot, if they're able to leverage all their know-how and to get into the market to do all things well, they will get highly rewarded, in the mobile, in the data, and eventually in the voice, in the data, and eventually mobile money segment. But initially going in, they are an underdog. We can't view them as the Safaricom that we're seeing in Kenya right now. You're more or less viewing them as Airtel, in that market at least, as they try and go in. It's a good thing that they're going in as a consortium, so it's not them alone, and they're able to spread out the risk But there are lots of considerations that must be made. Also, the political instability, albeit someone joked that even the bandits and the like need to communicate with one another so they can't destroy the infrastructure. It wouldn't do anyone any good in that particular regard. As to the financials, I'm thinking there'll be, wait, it's financials ended full year, what, 20, so ended December. I'm not sure, I can't remember when the ninis were lifted, the measures that the government had taken to cushion Kenyans, you know, so that had an impact on their financials before. I think that was half year, if I'm not mistaken. But going forward, seeing as those were lifted, the company will return back to previous profitability. Chief concern in our local market is the amount of market share that Safaricom has been losing over the past few years. It's still dominant, and Airtel is actually making a lot of losses because of their low-cost model, which is helping them gain market share. But you know, there could be the opposite effect of if they increase prices to the extent that Safaricom has, people might migrate elsewhere because they have the problem of poor network and the like. So it's hard to justify using this network when it's expensive and then it's poor. So I believe Safaricom will do okay. Like they'll do well in this. They always do well in a sense. But as Eric had mentioned earlier, all these things have been taken into account, and I think that they're playing out in the share price already. Right now, the share price isn't backward looking per se. It's really, really forward looking. The share price is actually taking into account Safaricom winning the Ethiopia license, and more so possibly establishing itself well within the region. If the opposite occurs, the company will suffer in the short to medium term, and also possibly in the long term, because it's already a mature company. So you know the growth phases. You start a startup, then there's the growth phase, then there's the maturity, and then eventually there's the decline if the company doesn't innovate. But I'm glad to see that the company is going to different sectors such as insurance, I think money management to some extent, and also the model that the new CEO is actually employing is really good. You know, it's those ones of Netflix and the like. It's only that the perception being given out is bad, you know, by some, let's say, factions of the media and some personalities out there, like what Kotu said, unfortunately. But it's good that they're creating small teams to be innovative rather than go through the entire bureaucratic process of going through the entire company, trying to get something online. Now things are innovative, things are quick. Yeah, which is good if you're going forward. Yeah, sorry, I've spoken a lot.
It's okay. You know, it happens with all analysts. Anytime you talk about something, when you're passionate about it, definitely it gets into you. So I'm seeing that most, and I'll just quote, I've seen reports from two major investment banks. I've had a report from Sterling Capital, and I've also seen a report from FIDA Investment Bank, of which Sterling Capital is looking at FIDA. They're definitely recommending a hold, but sorry, not looking at FIDA, my apologies, looking at Safaricom. They're giving Safaricom a hold recommendation, but then they feel that Safaricom is trading at a premium because of the rally that was driven by the announcement of Ethiopia and also the announcement of the interim dividend, which Safaricom issued earlier on in Feb. So according to Sterling, they think that Safcom is most likely to decline to 37 shillings and 59 cents or thereabout. I think this would be something that would be hard to hold. But then also at the same time, I'm also seeing the same from FIDA. But FIDA is optimistic. Let me just get the data. They're looking at Safcom. Oh, my God. Okay, this is heartbreaking, but I'm seeing FIDA is recommending Safcom. They're neutral on Safcom, so it's not a hold. They're not giving any recommendation. They're neutral on it, but the target price is, I feel, is pretty low at around 33 shillings per share. So we're seeing Sterling at 37 and FIDA here at 33. We're looking here, there are a few estimates as well that key ratios that these investment banks technically have. The service revenue for Safcom likely to go down 2.8%. The total revenue about 2.5%. That is from FAIDA. We're looking at the operating costs down about 3.2. These are forecast, guys. So technically, even these investment banks, what they're telling you is that, you know what, we're not giving you guys that this is something. This is just estimates that they probably think that this could be the case. The earnings per share for Safcom, they think it might go down marginally to about about 0.7. The dividend outlook, they're looking at a final dividend of 0.95. But it would be just important to just look onto that. Safcom had issued an interim dividend earlier on, which is already there. Coming to Starlink, I'd also just give guys a little bit of an outlook. The fair value estimate, I believe I've given guys that. So I've told guys that they're looking at Safcom to just come down a little bit. So on the other thing, we are seeing that they're looking at the earnings before interest and taxes for Starlink Capital. They're looking at earnings before interest and taxes to about 95.7 billion, which I don't know. I really don't know, but let's hope that things really come out. But also we're looking at M-Pesa revenues could be on the decline for the first time, I think, in a very long while. The year-on-year performance on M-Pesa could actually be low. But Davis, I know you've always had a little bit of an overview on these companies, on Safcom. Considering that Safcom is literally our market, Safcom currently is about 79% of, or at least 60% of our market, above 60% of the market capitalization. And so it's controlling a lot of market activity. I know what guys are really asking here is, would you agree with these estimates? Is it something that you as an individual, you think that something can be able to work with? And I'm also seeing on the forum, Carlos has said that the CapEx plan for 2021 is huge. That's for Safaricom. Maybe Davis, you'd want to say a few things on that as well. And then maybe I'd also just bring in Jackson as well later on.
Yeah, I tend to agree with the estimates, considering all the effects of the lockdowns and for the fact that transaction costs actually went down last year to help cushion citizens and the like. So in the short term, at least these financials, you can see a slump in revenue, but going forward, of course, it will recover in light of things picking up. Even though I've seen industry data showing that transactions actually decreased in light of transactions for less than 1,000 shillings really took up once those transaction costs were removed. However, they decreased quite significantly once they were placed back, as you know, people were getting weighed down by these transaction costs and the like. So Safcom will recover in the medium term. In the short term, it will suffer. It will have stagnant revenues or a slight decline, with regard to CapEx, as expected, it will likely go up quite significantly if they get the Ethiopia Telco license because of the amount that they need to invest in infrastructure and the like. And yeah, there's a lot of risks going forward, honestly, looking at the Ethiopia market. That's just something that people have to take into account going forward. If you're a long-term investor, of course, you'll ignore the noise and kind of hunker down and wait to see the outcome of all these things. If you have a bullish mindset toward the management and you know their diligence and the like, you know that the execution will be well, yeah, it would be a good long-term buy, as has always been the case. But just know that if this Ethiopia expansion is a huge miscalculation, the firm will really be weighed down, especially financially, which may even give a bit of opportunity for Airtel to take up more market share. I'm sorry, what was the last question?
I think you've touched on most of it. You've touched on what you think about the estimates that the two investment banks have given, and I believe I've just shared with you guys the Starlink report, the earnings and valuation. They really think the expectation. So you can also be able to just check on that and just share your thoughts as well later on. The question was really about, do you really think the prices were correct? And do you agree with them that the prices might come down? And I'll really just stress, I'm seeing one of the investment banks is saying, he's saying 33 as far as 33. And also I'm seeing Sterling as well on this other end saying that it could be at around 37. I don't know, but guys who bought in at around, I know, yes, definitely guys who bought into the company at prices of above 40 might have been just the fear of missing out, definitely. That's FOMO. But do you think that these prices would be sustainable? I know that's what most guys are really wondering, because technically, as much as it's not an investment advice that we're giving, but you and I technically just having a discussion, do you think that it would be okay to say, if I wanted to buy into Safcom, do you think you'd say that this price is now way up, way above the limit, or it's something that an investor could still consider? But you've also said that somebody who has a long-term outlook might still also consider just holding on to the company. Once again, guys, this was not an investment advice. Davis was just having an opinion, so always remember to...
Yeah, take that into account. I'm just sharing my own personal insights. This is not advice to buy or sell anything. So, yeah. To be honest, if you value Safaricom as a telecommunications company, which it is, you know, that's where majority of the revenues come from, it is severely overvalued. It's in fact quite overstretched. But you must realize that people have been saying it's overvalued since it was trading at roughly 19. Yeah.
The day we were saying Safcom was overvalued.
Yeah. So now, depending on the valuation metrics that you're using, it's either you're looking at the future prospects of the company, you've taken into account the expansion and have taken that into account in your model, you may be willing to pay a premium for it, but I would discourage that. The reason being is that, and there's actually something I recently shared here. It was on a certain podcast called Rational Investing. So the problem with investing in companies that are trading at such high premiums is that there's likely to be underperformance over longer periods of time, because future growth has already been taken into account and the share price is already trading at that future growth. As Eric had mentioned earlier, you'll find that Safcom may not even move, even if they announce good results, stagnant results, etc., because future growth prospects have already been taken into account. So as regard to the price targets, I would say price targets are... price targets of Safaricom have for some reason always been wrong on a historical basis. So people will make the price target, Safaricom will surpass. And a large reason for this is because if you look at indexes that are investing into emerging markets, you'll notice that Safaricom is the only one which has the float or that can meet these large funds investing into countries such as Kenya. So a lot of these funds are pushing the share price up of the prospects of the company, and also their models, the assumptions that they're making within their models. So the share price will always remain elevated. It will trade at the higher PE ratios, which are not accustomed to. You notice companies in our stock market trade at PE ratios of below 10, whereas in global markets, they're trading around 30s. Of course, that's because of the interest rate environment and a lot of other factors. But global investors who are particularly centered on Safaricom, because it's the only company that meets the capitalization, will invest in this company with the high PE ratios, driving the PE ratios even higher, because it's what they are accustomed to and what they have taken into account according to their pricing models. So for our local investors, I mean, our local brokers and the like, of course, will view it from the mindset of, let's say, our local other companies, in a matter of speaking. But global investors, they view it a bit differently. They're looking at future growth, future prospects, and the like. If you're analyzing the company looking backward, basing it on past performance and the like, you'll value it lower. Actually, I remember doing a model, I estimated CAGR going forward of, that's compounded annual growth rate of roughly 15%, discounted it at like 10%. I got a valuation of roughly 30, almost the same as those guys. So as you can see, yeah. So anyway, in a lot of words, I hope some insight was gained from that.
All right, Davis. I think we've really been on to Safcom, and maybe just before we have a discussion, Davis, you've done a review of KenGen. I don't know if you'd be sharing that report with us, and maybe just you'd give us an overview on the KenGen report that you actually did an analysis of.
Yeah, thanks for that. So I did an analysis on KenGen. I've tried to break it down into layman's terms so anyone can understand. So I've looked at the different revenue streams that the company has. Of course, electricity revenue taking majority of its revenue, bringing in roughly 80%. Taking a look at the expenses and expenses going forward, and also earnings, the bottom line and the like, and also done a valuation as well as a risk matrix as pertains to the company. The main risk that the company faces is, of course, the single buyer model, in that KPLC is the only company that can buy electricity that KenGen produces. And then the growth prospects of the industry as a whole have been quite low. I believe for the past 5 years, the CAGR has been less than 2% with regard to electricity demand growth, while electricity supply has grown at almost 3%, which is really daunting, because now we have a electricity supply of roughly 2,600 megawatts and a demand of roughly 1,800 megawatts. So we need time for this demand to catch up with supply. The problem is, EPRA keeps on signing new power purchase agreements, which increases the supply of electricity. It's a good thing that they're reviewing it. So they're talking to, you know, these discussions are being had, the renegotiation of power purchase agreements is being had, and hopefully that will bear fruit and allow some opportunity for electricity demand to catch up with supply. Because the risk that KenGen faces going forward is that they're enacting a good to great strategy, that's G2G. They're hoping to increase the electricity supply by 700 megawatts, mainly focusing on geothermal. That's a lot of renewable energy. And this is a huge problem, because who will it sell that electricity to going forward if demand doesn't grow at the same rate? You've noticed that it's trade receivables. The amount that it's supposed to receive from KPLC has grown at a compounded annual growth rate of 22%. That is insanely high. And this amount will continue to increase because the government, which is the largest shareholder in both companies, will not force KPLC to continue paying KenGen, even though they said they'll try to, but you know, they didn't give a timeline. And then they told KenGen not to look, not to follow up on the debts, in a sense. So the company is a really good company, but as you view it, you have to view it with the mindset that it's resting on KPLC. That's why it's performing mediocrely. I mean, it's only trading at 2x earnings, really. Yet the future prospects look really bright if the company, if the industry as a whole grows, if demand for electricity grows at a larger rate than supply, hoping that happens going forward. And but among things that I've mentioned in the report is similar to Safaricom, CapEx is about to go extremely high. In fact, in the year 2014, that's full year 14, they had capital expenditures of 61 billion. That drove their free cash flows to be negative. And going forward, as they enact the good to great strategy of increasing supply by 700 megawatts, that will happen again. Among the things that they'll profit from is that KenGen gets tax credits every time that it does what? It brings a new plant online. So in the year 2023, 2024, as a lot of its supply comes online, it will receive huge tax credits, and tax credits average roughly 32% of profit. So they will make a lot of money in those years. And assuming it continues trading at what it's trading at, investors will profit from dividends, they'll profit from a lot. Yeah, but there's a lot of different things that need to be taken into account when investing into KenGen or when looking into KenGen. So yeah, hopefully I'll share that in this group and in different forums so that guys can have a look. I've really tried to explain it in layman's terms so that everyone can understand, and yeah, I hope it's meaningful. And of course, it's not investment advice, it's merely just analysis for educational purposes.
All right, Davis, so maybe you've mentioned the technical bit. So in just one sentence, in English, in plain English, do you recommend, do you look at Kenjan as a stable company long-term? Not really, don't give a recommendation that buy or sell, but what would be your take? Do you look at Kenjan as a stable company long-term, or it might end up being another KPLC in just one sentence?
It is a very, very stable company. The diversification drive is so immense. The management is good. There's just so much innovation in that company. The problem is that it's subject to external factors, unfortunately. Yeah.
All right. Okay, guys. I know we've been here for long. We just have about 3 minutes left into the Bulls, Bears and Whiskey. So maybe I would give Eric Jackson a minute or two to say something, and then Asuma, you'd probably give us a close before we end today's session.
Yeah, well, me, I'm still just trying to digest Davis's comments on both Safaricom and Kenjan. But definitely, obviously, it's as we say here, we are not giving investment advice. We are here to educate, to just give you guys an insight or a deeper look into what a few things mean for these companies. And again, as we've always said, personally as well, I concur with Davis that I feel like Kenjan is long term is really a solid company with quite a lot of good things going for them, especially in terms of just strategy diversification beyond just Kenya, where they're looking at different markets like Ethiopia and other East African markets to just diversify that geothermal generation skills and expertise that they have in those markets. So we could see some revenues coming from the from that consultancy or those external drilling contracts that they are signing up. And again, at the end of the day, as we always say, they are paired with Kenya Power since they have to almost exclusively sell their power through there. So at the end of the day, we can't really have a discussion without looking at that effect of Kenya Power to Kenjan. But for me, again, personally, long term, I feel like it's quite a solid company. And on Safaricom, of course, quite a lot that we've shared and discussed, especially in terms of just what to expect this year. I feel like the numbers from the reports that Felix you've shared, they're quite pessimistic, so to speak. We understand, I personally understand that the recent rally to break the 40 barrier was driven largely by, you know, the sentiment of Ethiopia and, you know, just the culmination of all that news. But as well, I feel like there's still quite a lot going for Safaricom as a company. The management seems to have struck a chord. I think Peter Ndegwa started to really, you know, chart his own path beyond or away from what we were used to from Bob, the predecessor. So I feel like overall, it's quite pessimistic in the 33 region, but again, we anticipate that the results wouldn't really be very hard, given that some of the measures were really rolled back, and the rates on transaction charges and so forth came back into effect. So let's wait and see what the results how the results look like. But overall, I think I'm still quite optimistic about the company in the long term, especially given the prospects with Ethiopia.
All right, maybe Asuma, you might want to say a few words before we close today's session.
Thanks, Felix. Good insights from the team, Eric, and the likes of Captich Davis. Thanks a lot for those insights. I hope this will help a lot of people to generally know what's happening across the markets. And but this shouldn't be taken as investment and as investment advice. So I think my comments will be on a few things that have happened this week, basically on crypto. I think I don't have a piece of Dogecoin, but I think what's happening is that it's, I think Felix, you had mentioned it's that fear of missing out. I think that's why I think I saw a report that this week Robin reported that it was experiencing issues with the on its crypto exchange due to high trading volumes. I think part of what I saw that they had indicated there was a partial outage because Dogecoin had gone up to nearly 50%, I think, on just a single session. Bitcoin also coming back, but I think one of the things that I've been keenly watching isn't the likes of Dogecoin or Bitcoin. That I think there are these upcoming stable coins, some upcoming coins that I think a good example, there's one that a friend introduced me to that. I think they were releasing their IDO on a Tuesday at 0.25 cents. Within a week, it was at about 1.8. And I think most people still don't know some of these projects around DeFi that are coming up, but I've been learning a lot about some of these projects around DeFi, generally what they're trying to solve and how to get early to some of these projects. So it's an interesting space to get into and not just look at, I think, what people know as the likes of Dogecoin, Bitcoin, Ethereum. So many interesting projects coming up. I think it's also good to do your own research and know where to invest. And some of them are pretty, I think, depending on, say, your network, it's easier to get in at the early stages. Basically, compare it like getting in at the seed stage before it gets into an IPO. But I think for the DeFi projects, they're called IDOs. So I'm really learning a lot on this space. And I think going forward, I'll be able to share much more with the audience in terms of what I'm learning. They can also share the same. The other thing is that I think on Safaricom, look, I'm optimistic about that company. When you look at our local stock market, I think it's the only company that's well positioned for the future. Yes, most others are, but it's extremely well positioned. The expansion into Ethiopia, if they get a license to do mobile money at some point, well and good for them. But I think speaking on Peter Ndegwa's strategy, I think someone mentioned that the strategy to be a tech company, I think it's a good one. My thinking is that I think despite the complaints by, say, the media and some stuff, I think personally I like Peter Ndegwa's strategy. I think it's a good strategy to, from an investor's perspective, I already like his strategy. So I think as part of, as well, during the briefing next week, I think we'll try as the team and try get him on board for a podcast or to generally comment about what he thinks about the numbers, his strategy going forward, despite all these other things. I think despite all these complaints, the share price has gone up since he came on board. So, and most of the time, that's what investors usually care about. The other thing that I do not want to mention in this call is, look, what happened to Bill Gates and the family this week? I don't have much comments. Felix, you forgot to mention about that.
Oh, man. Thanks a lot. Actually, one thing that guys haven't really noticed is there are a lot of things. You know, there are crazy things people do in this market, you know? The market where guys actually place on which celebrity or famous couples are likely to get a divorce within the year. And we saw there was Oprah earlier on, there was Kanye West and Kim Kardashian, and it's Bill Gates. And they're actually guys who cashed out on that, you know? I don't know, like people are investing in any crazy idea. So, but anyway, that is a story for the celebrity side. I know access to such markets is also, they have a little bit of a cap on those markets, but maybe very soon they might always find a way.
Actually, there's a platform whereby you can you can place a bet on some of these events, politics, things like what's happening, some of these things. So,
you know, guys actually put a lot of bets even on war, and you're like, really?
Yeah, I think Felix, one of and Eric was talking about decentralized finance. So one of the biggest applications or use cases that has come out of decentralized finance is the prediction markets.
Yes.
So basically, where people, it's sort of like a betting, but in this case, we don't have market makers. So basically, in this case, you come up and you say, what Bill Gates are going to get divorced within the year, and then you guys decide the odds. And again, yeah, there I've really seen applications which are which have really peaked. And it's interesting that actually you had mentioned this, Felix, a while back about people betting on who is going to be the next couple to break up. And, you know, people actually had put their money on Bill Gates, and they are lucky, very, very lucky guys.
All right. So I believe we've been here for some time, and I know that a lot of guys are probably exhausted, and it's time to just possibly call it off. We can't say everything today. I know some of this stuff and some of the discussions will definitely be having a discussion around this, not really the similar topics, but a lot now regarding tech, regarding week-to-week stock performance as we talk on We're Curious on Friday. I know Jackson will also give us an update on what we should expect on the HISA app. He's really shared with us a nice preview of what to expect, mostly with the events market. We need to just also know an update. I know a lot of investors have been wondering when trading and stuff will come on the HISA app, and we mentioned that last week. But also, know you can also give us a more active, interesting update this week. For those of you who've been listening on Twitter Spaces, thank you all for joining in. It's been interesting having you guys on board. This was our first Twitter podcast for Twitter Spaces for Bulls, Bears and Whiskey. But on Monday, I know, and also last week on Friday, we also had We're Curious on both Twitter Spaces, Telegram. Once again, remember that the recording of this podcast will be available to you guys on the HISA platform. So you might want to just go up and just download the HISA app. It might take you just 2 minutes to sign up. All you need is just to get a phone number wherever you are. Today, I'm seeing a lot of guys have joined us in from Tanzania as well. Thank you all. I think, oh my God. Jackson. Felix. you know, I'm seeing guys from Tanzania. Some of our friends from Tanzania have joined in today, and I just forgot that we actually aired things out. The past 2 days, we've been airing things out. I was forgetting.
I think, Felix, what we can do is let's have an in-depth discussion on Kenya TZ relations and what to expect from President Suluhu's visit on the We Are Curious podcast segment.
On Friday.
So that because I wouldn't want us to have, you know, a half-baked discussion now. So I'd rather we save it for We Are Curious, where we can, you know, go deep into what to expect. Because so far, I think from today's visit, it looks like those relations are going to be much, much better than they were under the previous regime.
Yeah, and I'm really sorry, Wema. I know you really wanted us to touch on Tanzania and Kenya. We'll start with this on We're Curious on Friday. I'm really sorry I forgot about this. I think it's because a lot of conversations came in mostly regarding market. But we will have a more interesting session on Friday. And to top it up, I guess we'll also give you guys a few insights on how you can actually invest on the Dar es Salaam Stock Exchange in Tanzania. And also for those of you in Tanzania who've joined us today, we'll also give you guys a lot of insights on how you can be able to invest on the Nairobi Securities Exchange. So thank you all, guys. And I guess that's it for today.